I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show, James Altucher. He's an entrepreneur and angel investor. He is the author of the Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Choose Yourself, which I had recently read. It's amazing. Pick it up. James has started 20 companies, 17 of which have failed, but he learned so much along the way. Look, if you've ever been stuck in a job you hate, in a house you can't afford, in a life you don't want, in your own depressed mind, anything, James Altucher wants to help you. Why? Because he gets it. He's been there and he wants to tell you how he freed himself. So maybe you can start to free yourself too. Next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in to the number one criminal justice podcast out there, the CJ Evolution podcast. Thank you so much. If you would take a moment, rate, review the show on iTunes, we sure would appreciate it. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing. Maybe you're working in corrections, maybe you're a patrol officer. Keep up the fantastic work. You have much support. Big shout out to our sponsor, Detectachem. This amazing company is protecting our brave men and women, whether it's in the military or criminal justice field, with mobile threat detection that's available for the palm of your hand, folks. Head over to cjevolution.com. You'll see the link to Detectachem and see what they can do for your organization. I love coffee. I love Four Sigmatic. You're going to love the products, from elixirs to cocos to coffee. My favorite is the mushroom coffee. No, not the funny mushrooms, the actual good mushrooms that are good for you. You're going to love the taste. Head over to the website. You're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. You are going to love their products. On to the show with James Altucher. James Altucher on the show. Hello and welcome, sir.
Welcome. Thank you, Patrick, for having me on.
Well, I'm a big fan. I know many, many people out there listening are. And James, I know you're a big chess fanatic. And I got to ask, are you playing chess right now? Probably not, because you just got on the line, but are you going to play chess?
I am not playing chess right now.
How did you become such a big chess fanatic?
Well, when I was 17, they randomly needed someone on my high school's chess team. I wasn't really a chess player at all, and so I played in the last position, or we played some other high school, and I won my game, and I realized, oh, this was a way for people to appreciate me and like me. You know, it was kind of like many things, you want to get good at it because you want people to respect you for it, and chess seemed to be an area where, if you get good at it, people will also think you're smarter than you probably are. So I figured, oh, I might as well get good at this game and fool everybody into thinking I'm smart. And it worked. By the time I was 18, I was New Jersey's junior chess champion and one of the top ranking players for my age group in the country. Yeah. And it was fun.
Yeah, and I remember growing up, I mean, when I was kind of growing up in the 80s, I mean, you heard a lot about chess, Bobby Fischer and all these big, huge chess champions. I mean, you know, James, but I mean, is it still as big as it used to be, or is it kind of like a unique kind of niche kind of thing?
I think it's as big as it used to be. Yeah. I think, on the one hand, computers can win at chess, but on the other hand, more people than ever play it.
Amazing. Now, you got a bunch of books out there. Choose Yourself, which we were talking a little bit about before we started. Reinvent Yourself, both fantastic books that everybody should go get. What is your favorite book, James? I know, I think it was in Choose Yourself, you talk about you don't like a lot of the work you've written in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that... I think the thing with Choose Yourself is that there's a lot of self-help that's one of two categories. Either it's kind of this business self-help, like, oh, you got to crush it, you got to hustle and grind, you got to work 100 hours a week. Or it's this self-help where someone's on a pedestal and they say, look, this is how I became, X, Y, or Z, like a great leader, or I started positive thinking, or here's how you become a better positive thinker. And, I want to hear real stories. I don't want to just read from someone who seemed to be born on a pedestal. I want to see where they failed. You know, for instance, I wouldn't read a book about how to, you know, date from Brad Pitt. I'm not going to relate to his experience. If someone like me were to write a book on dating, it'd probably be much better because it's pretty hard for me.
Sure.
And I would have to learn the hard way. So everything I've written about, I've learned the hard way, whether it was investing for some of my earlier books or choosing myself because I rely too much on the institutions of society to achieve any success. And, you know, and it's not that easy to learn the hard way. That's why it's the hard way. So I think those are the best kinds of self-help books out there, is where you really kind of learn from the author's experience. And I feel like a lot of my books, I think I got better at that as I, you know, learn more about writing, for instance, as a craft.
Now, how did you become so comfortable, James? I know you talk to a ton of people. I do too. But how did you become so comfortable about talking about your challenges and failures? Because a lot of people, you know, they don't like that shit. They don't talk about that. It's kind of like we put it over there and we just leave it alone.
Yeah, I think people are afraid that their career will be hurt. In fact, a lot of times when I've been, you know, I've you know, wanted to raise money for a business or whatever, people would look at the kind of stuff I was writing and they would flip out. They would be like, "Oh, James, you can't raise money doing this. No one's gonna want to trust you raising money." And they were right. Like, people didn't want to trust me. Sometimes you just have to be like honest and find out where your career is really. You know, you can't make a career out of falsehoods. You got to tell the truth.
And I think that's the key, one of the keys to success, because we live in a society, James, you know, that people are trying to be other friggin' people. You know, they're trying to be somebody that they're not. And I just believe, like you do, it sounds like, authenticity.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
How important, I know you've talked about emotions before. I mean, how important are emotions when it comes to business?
Emotions are extremely important. Like, if you're, let's say you're selling your company and you don't have any money in the bank, but you could potentially sell your company for, I don't know, make up a number, $5 million. That's pretty scary to sit mm-hmm. down and figure out, you know, nobody buys a company just on the basis of the company. It's they're buying you also, and they're buying the vision you've created, and you have to sell that vision. And that's what's going to determine the price. Price is all perception. And, you know, that's all psychology. It's like, I would say in business, you know, when I talk to, I have a lot of different types of businesses, but when I talk to my main business partner, we're involved in a lot of different deals together. Mm-hmm. I would say 90% of the conversation is psychology and not like, oh, what are their sales? What are their profits? Like, we already know that stuff. We don't, and it doesn't really change them. And it's not a big factor in what decisions we have to make today. Instead, it's like, well, how does so-and-so feel about the company? Is he trying to sell the company? Do we feel he has the skills to sell the company? Because that's a hard skill. It's a different skill than starting a company. It's a different skill than growing a company. So psychology is very important. I wouldn't say it's 90% of the job, but it's definitely 90% of the conversations I have about business.
Do you think that I'm sure businesses fail on, you know, for a number of reasons, but do you think not understanding the psychology of the consumer is part of the reason why so many businesses fail?
That's part of it. Like, and also not understanding the psychology of their investors and not understanding the psychology of their employees. So not being able to motivate properly. I think there's a lot of reasons why businesses fail. It could be not understanding the market. Like, for instance, a lot of businesses don't know what business they're in. So if you ask somebody, well, what business is Google in? The common answer might be, well, Google is in the search engine business. That's not true at all. Google is an advertising business. They mm-hmm. they make their money mostly from advertising. That's 99% of their revenues. They don't make any money from search. They don't sell search to anybody. They don't you know, you get your search for free. So they're really in the business of selling you, their customer. And they sell their customer to people who are willing to pay top dollar to advertise to that customer. And I think that's important to realize.
And a lot of people don't know that. I knew that just from, you know, I found that out about a year or two ago. But a lot of people think that's all Google does, just search engine shit.
Well, they don't do that at all. they have a great search engine. That's something that they use to attract people for free. But they also have an email service. That's another way.
Sure.
They also have a network of sites that they put AdSense on. So all those things together, they offer a lot of different things for free. I don't pay Google for anything. I think maybe Google storage, I guess I don't pay for Android, but I guess I pay for the cell phones. I don't know. And I get Android for free as a result of that. But, if you're not paying, then you're the product. And who are they selling the product to? Their customers, which are advertisers. And so Google is in the business of selling you to their advertisers. And how whatever the intermediary is, whether it's a search engine or Gmail or your location data or whatever, those are all just intermediaries to getting what they want, which is selling you to their advertisers. And so what I'm saying is when you go into business, ask yourself what business you're really in. And that kind of that could help you. You know, even if you interview, I've talked to people about this. Even if you interview 20 companies and say, "Hey, what do you need?" and they all say, "Oh, we need some kind of service to keep track of our sales efforts." Well, okay, you build the product, you build exactly what they asked for, and then you try to sell it to them, and they're like, "I don't know if this will integrate with our." Even businesses don't know what they want, and so you kind of have to think really hard what is the business? What do the customers really want?
Mm-hmm.
And what business can you build to sell to them?
Interesting.
And I think that's a big challenge. I think that's the reason why a lot of businesses fail, I think, is because they don't know what they're really selling. Like take a comedy club, for instance, a business which, for better or for worse, I am in. Is a comedy club really in the business of selling quality comedians, you know, to their audience? No, comedy club is in the business of selling alcohol. So a comedy club is just kind of a fancy name for a bar that has you provide a different reason than other bars for going to your bar.
That's a good segue to the question I'm going to ask you right now. You brought up comedy. Now, you're an aspiring stand-up comedian, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say aspiring in the sense that I don't want to be a professional
stand-up. Yeah, yeah.
I have no interest in that. But I really love comedy as an art form. And I also am really interested in skill acquisition. And comedy is – I've learned a lot of skills in my life. And this is not bragging or anything. Like you mentioned, chess is one skill that I've learned. And there's been other skills, investing, entrepreneurship, writing, and so on. But comedy is like one of the hardest skills I've ever learned. And so I'm just fascinated by skill acquisition in general.
Well, I'm fascinated that people like you get up in front. I don't have any problem getting up in front of people, but I guess when it comes to comedy, I mean, you tell me, James, I mean, we went and saw Kevin Nealon a couple weeks ago, and it was interesting.
Oh, really?
Because he was in Colorado. Funny, just funny as hell. But I remember he was kind of testing the water a little bit with some of his jokes. And apparently some of the jokes didn't go over too well with the audience. I thought they were funny, but, you know, anyway, they didn't think it was. But what do you do when you get up there and people are like, this guy isn't funny? Or I'm not saying it happens to you, but I'm just, my God, that's like.
It happens to every comedian. Okay, put it this way. It doesn't happen to me as much as it used to. I'm doing this for quite some time, but it definitely still happens to me. And one technique is to blame the audience, but I don't like to do that because it's usually my fault and not the audience's fault. But I would say you try to learn from the whole goal is to get better. So you're never going to be perfect, and you just have to figure out what are the techniques for getting better and what did I learn from this failure? Because you're going to fail all the time. And so, like, for instance, the last time this happened to me, I did a set that has worked for me in the past. So, I could say, well, it must have been the audience's fault. This is just a stupid audience. But the audience wasn't really any different than the prior time. So you have to really now that I've eliminated that it's probably not the material and mm-hmm. it's probably not the audience. So what about me? Could I have done differently? Was it the way I performed? Was it something about the crowd that I was missing? So you always have to ask yourself questions. Like, I study the video of what happened. Like, what's going on that I'm not recognizing in the audience that's my fault, that I should have recognized that I could have done a little differently. And so I use everything as a way to do skill acquisition. So, and for instance, I don't believe in the 10,000 hour rule, where you need 10,000 hours to get great at something.
Malcolm Gladwell, yeah.
Yeah, not quite Malcolm Gladwell. He got it from another guy, Anders Ericsson, who's mm-hmm. a professor who developed the theory. And, there's lots of ways to skip those 10,000 hours, and that's what I really try to learn. So stand-up comedy becomes a vehicle for me to learn how to get better at skill acquisition, because it's a particularly hard skill. Or let's say I was interested in investing, which I have been in the past. How do I get to be among the best investors in the world without putting in 10,000 hours? Because normally you don't have 10,000 hours. Like, I was broke. I needed to get good immediately at investing. And it's when you have kind of a panic to get good at something, then that usually incentivizes you to figure out how to get good at it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I don't know if I subscribe to the 10,000 hours. I think for me, James, I would rather many different things. I mean, unless you're like a doctor or something like that. I mean, I just believe in being more versatile. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's the right word, but, just devoting time to different things.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, it depends. Sometimes there's a certain joy, too, of getting really good at something quickly, and particularly if it's something you love. So there's probably things you love. Like, what's a hobby that you love?
Golf.
Yeah. So golf is a great example of something that maybe does require the 10,000 hours. I mean, there was a guy who was trying to do it. He was starting from scratch, and he wanted to learn be a professional golf player. So he figured he would put in the 10,000 hours. And I think he got an injury after 5,000 or 6,000 hours, but he got pretty good. And so to some extent, the 10,000 hours was very helpful to him. I do think, it would be nice to get good at things without having to put in that kind of, work and effort.
Now, can you talk about your four principles that you do every day?
Yeah. So I think it's very important. And I kind of came to this, not really, I don't want to say in a haphazard way, but I kind of came to this by saying to myself, oh my gosh, I'm broke again. How do I overcome constantly getting, how do I get over this constant cycle of making a lot of money, losing a lot of money, making a lot of money, losing a lot of money? And what am I doing right on the way up? And what am I doing wrong on the way down? And I'd made money and gone broke so many times. It was almost like statistically significant, using myself as the sample, the size of the sample. And I realized every time I had made a lot of money, I would think to myself, okay, that's it. I'm all done. I would kind of hit my hands together, like, finished. I don't have to be work at improving being a human anymore. I succeeded. And instead, what I realize is every day I need to work on physical health. Every day I need to work on emotional health. So every day I need to work on creative health. Every day I need to work on spiritual health. Those four things. And I need to ask myself, what did I do today to work on those four things? So physical health might mean I ate, moved, and slept good. Sleeping might be I slept 8 hours a day. Eating might be I ate healthy foods. Sleeping, you want to sleep 8 hours. Moving, you did some kind of exercise. Emotional health, was I involved with people that I love and respect and who love and respect me, or did I have to deal with people I don't really like? Did I say no when I really, or did I say yes when I really wanted to say no? So there's all sorts of things that make up, toxic relationships or toxic interactions, and you can't avoid them, but you can improve at them. Creative health, did I write down my 10 ideas a day? Because ideas are a muscle. Everyone thinks, when inspiration hits, then I'll have my great idea. But you have to inspiration and creativity are a muscle. You have to get practice it. So I practice it by writing 10 ideas a day down, and and then also I might do a podcast mm-hmm. that helps my creativity, or I might write that helps my creativity. So creativity is something that you have to exercise so that when the good idea comes, you're ready. You also have good execution ideas, so you can execute on those ideas, or you have an ability to understand if an idea is good or bad. So that's another aspect. You know, everybody thinks, oh, well, I'll know when I have a good idea. Nah, most people don't really know when they have good ideas. You have to get good at knowing that. And so, and then spiritual health's important, which it sounds weird. It sounds like I'm talking about like prayer or meditation, but really spiritual health just means, oh, I'm a little bit better at surrendering to those things that I have no control over. And that's very important.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, I mean, and I will obviously, is I got that idea. So I write down ideas all the time because of you when I read that in Choose Yourself. And I think it's an amazing idea. So for people out there listening, start writing your ideas down, because you're right, James. I mean, I would have ideas and then I would do the stupid thing and not write it down and then try to remember it. And I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? I know it was a good idea. But I write 10 ideas down every day. And I like what you said about it doesn't matter how crazy the idea is. Statistically, some of those ideas are going to be pretty good, right?
Yeah. If you're writing down 10 ideas a day, and that means you've written 3,650 ideas down a year, because there's no days off on this. You've written down 3,600. Now, most of those ideas are going to be bad, but what if you have one really good idea? You're going to have at least one really good idea. I've made millions and millions of dollars because of this one technique, because you're going to have so many ideas. And by the way, most people don't write down any ideas. So you're who's going to compete better? The person who has over 3,000 ideas, or the person who has zero ideas? And let's say along the way of writing 3,000 ideas, you also get better. People say ideas are a dime a dozen. Execution is everything. Maybe that's true. Maybe that it's not. But execution, I can tell you, is execution ideas are a category of ideas. You have to be good in order to get good at executing. You have to get good at coming up with execution ideas. So I had one friend. She had a business idea, very good business idea. And the way she was going to execute on it was she was going to raise several hundred thousand dollars, pay for the software, and launch her business. And I said, well, why don't you call up some of your friends and see if they want this idea that you have, and then you execute on it manually for them, and then you'll get a sense of what kind of things they're really asking for, what things really need to be automated, so that when you're actually managing a team of software developers, which, by the way, you've never done before, you'll have a better sense of what you really need when you're paying $100,000. Mm-hmm. And so just helping her come up with a better idea on how to execute her on her business was important.
And it's becoming better. You talk about 1% better every day. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So sometimes that's hard to qualify, but like take something like playing golf. I can't really, well, actually that's easier to qualify, because you can tell if you're improving. Well, let's take something like the piano. I want to be a better piano player. Well, if I practice my scales and I feel like I'm getting a little bit better at the scales, then maybe that's improved me 1% for today. And, here's the interesting thing. Most people think about compounding in terms of money. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, if I compound 1% every day, then in 72 days, I have a lot more money. But most people don't think of it in terms of other things like skill acquisition. And that's very important, actually. If I can improve my skills 1% a day, then that's 3,800% better a year when compounded. Now, again, it's hard to quantify sometimes the quantification of skills, but do it best efforts. Like, oh, I'm a little bit better painter today than I was yesterday because I mm-hmm. studied Picasso's Blue Period, and I tried mimicking it a little bit, and I learned something, and I learned some history about art, and I'm probably 1% better than I was yesterday, which is not a lot. It's just a little bit, but I'm probably 1% better. Ping pong. I focused on my backhand. I did 200 repetitions of my backhand. So I'm probably 1% better. And I had a teacher correct me when I messed up. So I'm probably 1% better at my backhand at ping pong today. So it's not that hard to guess when you're 1% better. Mm-hmm. And again, compare yourself to the person who isn't trying to improve 1% every day. You're going to be 38 times better than you started off with. He or she's going to be 0% better in a year.
I think the key too, James, is don't quit, right? I mean, if you want to get better at something, so many people just give up, but you got to keep at it. I know it's simplistic, but it's true. You know, tenacity, right. Grit, you got to keep going for it.
Right. Or you could stop. So for instance, let's say I'm doing stand-up comedy. All right, that's great. But I'm not going to be a professional stand-up comedian. I like doing stand-up comedy. I think it actually helps me in other areas of my life, like business and so on. But I don't necessarily need to be persistent at it. I just want to get, like, pretty good at it. And, you know, that's a lot different than, you know, I think persistence is overrated. I think knowing when to quit, knowing when you've had enough is also important.
But I do think that, I mean, and I want your take, so many people quit after the first fail, right? I mean, I talk to people all the time and you know, I tried it once and then I'm giving up. I'm not talking about knowing when to quit. I mean, I know that, but I'm talking about people who just quit after they fail the first time. And they could have done better if they would have just stayed in the race.
Yeah, I think that's true. It really just depends on what you want to do. Like, what's your goal in doing this? And, you know, like if your goal is to be a professional golfer, then you might not want to quit ever.
Wrapping up, a couple more questions, James. How important is gratitude?
Gratitude is very important. But again, it's one of those things you have to be careful about in that, you know, everyone says, oh, keep a gratitude journal every day. That's a lot of work. I'm already writing 10 ideas. I'm trying to exercise. I'm trying to improve my emotional life and deal with people I love and trim the people who are more toxic. If I'm at the end of the day also writing, oh, here's 10 things I'm grateful for, I think people can get lazy at that and say, oh, I'm grateful for my mom and dad. I'm grateful for my kids. I'm grateful I make a living and I have food to eat. Like, these are all dumb things to be grateful for. And I think, and even evidence sort of shows that better to think of the things you're grateful for, not every day, but maybe 2 or 3 times a week tops. So then you can do a little bit of a deeper dive and really appreciate the things you're being grateful for. So gratitude is important. And maybe more important is to not do the reverse, which is what might be the reverse of gratitude is kind of wishing you had more. Or being envious of someone who you think has more. So you know, there's that saying, when you compare, you despair. I think it's important to, and this is the whole idea of choosing yourself, not be in the typical hierarchies. So in golf, you're measured by, and there's a hierarchy, what's your handicap? In comedy, that might be, oh, well, did you do comedy on the Colbert Show, or did you perform at this club, or, you know, how many years have you been doing it? I think the key is don't fall prey to the typical hierarchies. Like, if you want to be an entrepreneur, oh, well, maybe you should work at, maybe you should get an MBA first, or maybe you should work at Google first or a startup first. I don't know. You kind of should decide what's right for you and not decide what anybody else thinks is right for you ultimately. Now, it's good to take good advice from people you trust, and it's good to cultivate a network of people you trust. But at the end of the day, you've got to choose yourself for success, and that's the main person that's important. You know, I don't know if that answers quite the question on gratitude, but it's all connected.
No, it does. And do you think, really quick, James, do you think part of that is because just in this instant gratification society we live in, people on Instagram, you know, people looking at people on Instagram saying, oh shit, they have the perfect life. I want that life. Do you think that's part of it?
Absolutely. Like, I can't remember the last time. First off, I don't look at my feed on Facebook or Twitter. I just look at, you know, I'll look at my page to see who likes my posts. And I probably shouldn't even do that. I probably do that more than I should. But and Twitter, I will never look at the Twitter feed. It's just meaningless. And I think, look at it. I don't know if it's totally connected, but think about the rise in plastic surgery and cosmetic surgery
over the past few years.
Yeah, and people see all the best pictures of all these people, and they think, oh, well, that's, I need to look as good as that too. When you're only seeing like the best pictures of each person.
Yeah. Then people say, oh shit, you know, that's, I'm a wreck. I'm a mess. Well, James Altucher, thank you so much, my friend, for coming on the show. People find you, they go to where? JamesAltucher.com?
Yeah. JamesAltucher.com. And again, I really appreciate you having me on. I hope you had a fun time and, if you ever want to have me on again or have any other questions, or if any of your guests have any questions, they can ask you on Twitter and I'll be happy to answer them. And, yeah, thanks again.
Well, keep up the great work, James. So really quick, any plans for another book?
Yes. In fact, I've been working that out right now. I think I'm going to write about this aspect of self-help, which is that, you know, it's not always necessary to hustle and grind for every little piece of success that you have. Like sometimes it's better to enjoy life a little bit.
Yeah, I love it. Well, James, have a fantastic day, sir. Thank you for coming on the show. Much success to you. And hopefully I'll talk to you again in the future.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.